You should celebrate yourself every day, but some days you should celebrate with jewelry. Whether you want to commemorate an unforgettable moment or just bring some added sparkle to your collection, Blue Nile can offer you expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com today and experience the ease and convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
At some point, I mean, I've hit the record button, Jules Gill, and we're just going to make this work. So I don't mind how we do it.
We've got brand new assets, mate. It suddenly feels a bit too real and a bit too professional. And I'm pretty sure that the people can see us as well, which again is quite unnerving. So I was just saying to you before we started, like, if we're upping the side of the asset quality, maybe we should up ourselves as hosts. I mean, like, we should do like sort of like, it's Scott and the Egg here in the morning on the Untitled Banter podcast.
The fried eggs in the morning. So we should outline the fact that we've been doing the Untitled Banter podcast. Not going to remove anything from this. It's not going to be edited.
It's not a podcast. I've not been working out much.
It's the floppy egg cast. We've been doing this for a little while. This is our 10th episode, 11th episode. We started on audio only, and now we've broken through because this is the UBP. Which thanks to everybody for sending in their questions. Basically, if you're starting on the video side of things, we do a weekly take trough of questions people can send stuff over. We tend to ask for them on a Thursday. Check myself, Scott Tailford, or Mr. Jules Gill's Twitter feeds on a Thursday, asking whatever's on your mind, whatever's going on in the gaming industry, old school questions, food questions. Literally anything. We rank some eggs. We've done that. And we don't mind. And so, you know, we tend to wear a little bit of the dressing gowns because it started audio only. And then if you want to get a dressing gown, bring it on a Friday. You know, this is just a Friday wind down thing.
This is the thing. If people want to get involved with it, grab a cup of tea, become part of the gown gang, put on your dressing gown and just sit down and vibe with us straight into the weekend.
Now, I don't know if I ever told you, it's barely relating to anything, but I don't know if I told you that I'm a registered Dudist priest. I think I've told you this. Am I?
Not going to lie, Scott, when you said registered as the first word, I got very worried very quickly. I was like, oh, well, 10th and final episode, is it, mate?
20 okay. On a Friday,
you're a registered priest in the dudism.
Yeah, so you know when the Big Lebowski, obviously the Big Lebowski, big legendary film, there's an entire religion that came from that movie called dudism. And you can, I don't know if you can still do it, but I did do it back when I was a student. You can go online, get yourself registered as a Dudist priest, and they send you a certificate, which is what I am. So I'm an ordained Dudist priest. If you want to get married, mate, you let me know.
But no, surely it must. It can't give you the power just to go around just going, boom, you're married.
Like, I don't know. I don't have the materials anymore, but I was sent something.
That's not a power that you should have because you will not wield it responsibly. I'm worried now that you've technically married your wife way before she was actually ready to. You just go like, boom, we're married. And she's like, well, now we've got to make it official.
Well, yeah, I mean, under the guise of dudism, the reason I brought that up is because part of dudism is obviously adhering to having a white Russian as often as possible, which is the ultimate dressing gown combo. And so, you know, what the hell is that?
It looks like slop. It looks pretty unappealing. It's a peanut butter and berry smoothie that I made. Is that close enough to the white Russian?
No, but it can be a purple mess.
It
can be an Untitled Banter podcast tradition that you just blend whatever the hell's in the room.
I'm not blending whatever the hell's in the room because that would lead me to go into the hospital more times than most. But I'm thinking if we actually like lend into this and got our own signature cocktail. There's got to be something. If somebody can find a way of combining vinegar and eggs into a cocktail.
Oh, God. Well, we did that. There's the video of us drinking that.
That was a punishment lost thing.
I will quickly say as a traditional food that goes alongside the UBP, it's your twisted Marmite and sweet chili madness. Not going to hang on it too long, but if you want culinary ideas, and we can go with that. One actual order of business, though, to get onto everybody's questions. This started over on Twitter, and it's sort of like, it is a big old debate, because you're on the other side of the fence to me.
SSX3
versus SSX Tricky. Big Dargo swung in and said, can confirm it's SSX Tricky. We had Greg say, look, you guys spelled SSX3 wrong as the best one. Dr. Fun Stuff said Tricky's great, but SSX3 is superb. And that's also not counting how good NBA Street Volume 2 was. Phenomenal game, NBA Street 2, but that's not the debate for right now. SSX3, though, you love
is
that.
It's the best one. It's
and
the
you're
best
wrong,
one.
It's SSX Tricky. What are you talking about?
Okay. So I totally understand where you're coming from with SSX Tricky, because of the fact that you look at its over-the-top nature. They pulled in a ton of really like eccentric voiceover artists to come and like come in and voice the characters. Really funny dialogue. I like the sort of rival system that they built in it. But SSX3 is that, but more. The whole living mountain thing that was like amazing, where you could ride from the very top all the way to the bottom. The soundtrack was so good. EA was it DJ Atomica? Well, yeah, he was, what a legend. He was annoying as all hell, but you absolutely fall in love with him, especially when you realize that the, because you and I have chatted about this before, about the, how amazing the sound is, the sound design is in that
game.
Oh,
yeah. I love the fact it dips out when you're in the midair. Yeah,
when you go up the ramp, up into there, everything drops out. And then as soon as you land again, all the bass and all the drums come back in again. You're like, oh, this is so good.
Thing is, I will say that obviously Finger 11, there's that one song, Good Time by Finger 11, that I think is a phenomenal song. I just, SSX for me, it's like you said, it's the over the top, it's the energy, it's the characters. And those voice actors, like SSX Tricky's versions of those characters for me are better than they are in 3. Like Nick Malaparaman's Moby, the dude that plays Simon, and it's just all their lines.
The guy who played Simon, do you know where he's from?
It's Jim Rose, isn't it, I think?
Yeah, he actually has like I don't want to use the term if it's wrong or not PC nowadays, but he has a sideshow, which it was like a sideshow circus thing that was going on. And they got him in, and he like brought with him, there's like a documentary. And he brings in his mate, he just like shoves a nail through his face. He's just kind of like, you're not on video, mate. What are you doing?
He always said that he got the Simon voice by putting like a spoon up his nose. And then he's and it's like, he figures it out. But I get that Tricky reuses a lot of SSX1's levels, but it's just that for me, the whole Living Mountain thing, I thought was a really cool idea, but it meant that a lot of the levels looked the same, that you were rerunning those areas over and over again. And it's just, I like the variety that's in Tricky.
I am aghast and appalled. Look, to be fair, you are totally right. Focusing on like the track layout from SSX Tricky, I would agree with you saying that there are maybe three or four of like the all-time greatest SSX levels are in Tricky, or SSX 1 that became versions in Tricky.
SSX
3 doesn't have like consistency, but it has moments that are so brilliant that they are the defining point of that franchise.
I do also love all the customization. Like the thing, it's weird because I think it's a double-edged sword. Like on the one hand, I can make Moby's my favorite, so I can make Moby like a 10 out of 10, all 10s on his stats and make him the best. But because everybody starts on the same, it's like 1 point for each stat thing.
Yes.
Then it doesn't, there's not as much character variation in the campaign mode unless you take them in the arcade thing. So it's like, I kind of miss that. I like the idea of, you know, picking like Eddie or Elise or Zoe
because
or whatever.
And they're slightly better at one
different
thing than
the
other.
Which it goes alongside the whole voice actor thing, the character side of it. Like just, I don't know. I think it's maybe a youth thing that I played it obviously when I was younger and I just adored that game, but it's the sound effects. It's the whole sound footprint, audio footprint of that franchise. Like you give me Simon saying French toast and syrup and I'm right back. Or like Eddie saying, you can see his house from here. And it's just, it's great.
Wasn't when he goes when Simon goes up, he's like, it's cold up here in the stratosphere.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just like, man, it's so bad. I just give me an SSX like trilogy. I don't need a remake or whatever. Just give me access to those games again.
That was the most infuriating thing about that SSX reboot that they did in 2013-14, whenever that was. They brought it out and they like stressed that it was going to be like a return to form, that it was going to be like SSX Tricky, or it was going to be like an amalgamation of SSX 3 and Tricky. Living Mountain, but crazy over the top tricks. And what we got is we got a little bit of that, but then they got stuffed full of gimmicky things like the wingsuit and like the pickaxe stuff. And I'm just like, I don't need any of this. Strip it back. Don't add more stuff in.
Totally. I thought, their version of Eddie as well was like a DLC only character, and they made his hair all short.
I was infuriated by that.
It was just like, like I said, if SSX to me is the characters and the energy, and they removed all of that and they made it this like more X Games type thing. And it just, the rewind mechanic that only rewound you, but everyone else kept going. So if you fell off the track, then then like only you get hampered. So it was just stupid. Not to worry. Next question from Steve. Because obviously the SSX debate is never going to be concluded.
We should put it to a vote. Everyone should vote. Just like somebody put a top comment of SSX tricky. Somebody else put a SSX3 and just keep voting up.
I'll do a little poll on the community side of things and you can vote for one of the two. I think people go with tricky, but you never know.
I'll tell you what, we'll put it onto because I meant to schedule a community post for the Sunday. Put it on Sunday. That'll be Sunday's question.
Yes. Anyway, next question from Steve. With Resident Evil Village introducing the tall lady as an awesome new vampire character, what are your top three? Video game vampires? Bonus question, can you name a vampire who enjoys being one more than Kane? Kane would be my number one anyway.
I was disappointed. I thought that the question was going to go, can you name any other big beef boys? And I was just going to be like, Dojin the Giant.
Oh, but Dojin, that's fan art waiting to be done. Like Dojin and Big Tall Lady from RE8.
No, mate, the shipping has already been done between her and King of the Cosmos from Katamari Damacy.
Yeah? Is he actually that big? I thought he was tiny.
He's huge. The prince is small. The prince is small. The king of the cosmos is like, he's as big as the cosmos. He's as big as he wants to be.
Fair enough.
Have you played the game? I can't remember which one it is on the PS2, but there's like a really obscure and pointless challenge where you got to collect a million roses by rolling them all up.
Oh, for Katamari?
Yeah.
I never played the very beginning of Katamari.
Don't worry, because I'm about to make it brilliant for you now. You spend like hours now rolling around these roses. And at the very end, the king just comes down and says, oh, well done, you've done it. Probably could have spent your time a bit better. And then there's no reward for it whatsoever. So people have started drawing him presenting the roses to Big Tall Vampire Lady. It's so sweet.
Oh, God. That's like Animal Crossing Doom crossover, like the crossover we didn't know that we needed. in terms of like video game vampires, my mind obviously would have gone to Kane. Goes to Detlaf from Witcher. And then after that, I'm a little bit more hard pressed, unless there's someone really obvious that I'm missing.
I'm thinking that anyone from Vampire the Masquerade, they're so over the top, you can't really choose a favorite because they're all just like incredibly campy.
True. Speaking of that game, not related to anything at all. Well, it is. Okay. I didn't know Vampire the Masquerade is in like a whole D&D sub franchise fiction thing with Werewolf the Apocalypse. That stupid werewolf game that I spent £45 on. Carry on.
I knew you bought it. I saw that post come up and it said, should I buy this new, clearly 6 out of 10 werewolf game?
Oh, it's like
three. The choices were yes, no, you've bought it already. And it was just, I knew that he'd immediately bought it already.
At that point, I hadn't bought it already, but I was planning on doing it as soon as I finished my shift. And yeah, when I got, I was like, I'm not going to not play this. It's a werewolf game and there's nothing else to do right now. So like, whatever. And that game's very bad. The combat's good, but everything else is terrible.
Hold on. Spare with me 2 ticks, mate, because I'm going over to the old...
You're Googling the vamps. Vamp from Metal Gear Solid, of course.
Oh yeah, he's amazing. Yeah.
He's like, he's not really like a full proper vampire, but he's like a nanomachine power vampire. I'll take Vamp.
Okay, so we have also, we've got... Infamous Festival of Blood, apparently, becomes a vampire in there.
Kind of.
Legacy of Kain, lots of that. Vampire Reign, Vampire Killer.
There's a bit of a niche, chasm
Rain.
To fill. Blood Rain, yeah, Rain, of course, yeah, Rain.
Honestly,
Werewolf, Blood Rain 2 is good fun.
It's good .. fun.
Well, when I played Werewolf the Apocalypse, that reminded me of Blood Rain 2 in a horrible way, but also in a really fun way. But in Blood Rain 2, you could like lasso dudes with thing and then throw them into stuff, and it was fun.
I have the all-time winner that everyone's just going to berate us for forgetting straight away.
Of course.
It's Dracula from Castlevania. Like, literally, he's the biggest, baddest MFer out
there. I think it's just the Castlevania for me is more of a Netflix series than an active franchise right now, like, as a game franchise. Like that Netflix...
Symphony of the Night is I just wrote about it for a previous article. I people won't know this about us, but in our work, we have like a word count limit that we're meant to kind of hit for our entries, and that you should go around between like 180, 200 words, depending on how quickly you can read it out. I wrote down my love of Castlevania Symphony of the Night. Look back at it, 700 words. I was like, oh, I've written an essay. Why have I written an essay on this?
Like, I think Castlevania is obviously like video game royalty. But it's just like I said, they haven't had a new installment that's been talked about in a while. Whereas the Netflix show is so good, especially I love to see how tight season one is. If anyone who's a Castlevania fan hasn't seen the Netflix show of Castlevania, it's brilliant. Yes. And next question, though, from Jacob Wright. He says, UBP. He says, how are you, legends? Thank you very much. Aww. Legendary and as returned to you. With the Mass Effect remaster coming in May, will you be choosing the same choices you made originally, or will you be actively making new choices? Hashtag Team Tally.
Right. Okay. He's actually just raised a very good point, because I have... Right, we spoke about this, you and I, a long time ago, off camera, obviously, because it got too mushy. We talked about our first video game loves, our first video game crushes. In fact, we might have actually done a chatty face.
We did a thing on it, yeah.
And I was just like, it's Tali, like, I absolutely love her. Like, she's so sweet. She's so reliable. She's such a valuable member of the party. And it's just like everything about her. I was just like making decisions that would benefit the relationship between me and her. I know that when I come back and I play that again, that's going to be like coming back to an old love. You're not going to be able to resist it. I will be trying. I'll be looking at like Miranda and I'll be like, oh, you're genetically perfect. Oh, la-di-da. Make me feel bad about having a carb day.
There comes a time in every boy's life or every sort of every person who thought Miranda was attractive where you have to realize the fact that you're being manipulated, that it is ridiculous, and there is more to a relationship than just like full on stonks. And I think that it needs to, you
know, stonk Tailford out again.
I know. For me, when I was younger, I obviously tried to date Ashley in Mass Effect 1, and then she disappears in Mass Effect 2, and then it was like, oh, foie, Miranda foie, and then went for her in Mass Effect 2. And then in Mass Effect 3, I don't even remember what happened in that game. So I'm looking forward to going back to this with all the DLC installed, stuff that I've bought separately anyway because it's me, but having all of it installed properly and doing a fresh new character with everything the way the devs intended, none of the EA separating or Javex over here and the Leviathans over there and whatever, and just play it through properly. So I think some of it will line up with what I did, but I also want to experiment or just see how it feels when all the DLC characters come in and all that kind of thing. So I think it'll be a new playthrough.
I mean, it's been a long time since you and I have actually played through this. So will we even remember all of the intricate choices that we've made? Probably not.
Well, funnily enough, when they announced this, I'm already going back through the trilogy anyway because my wife hadn't played it. So I played Mass Effect 1 just last year and we're halfway through Mass Effect 2. So I'm going to end I know Mass Effect 2 holds up so well. Mass Effect 1 holds up really well, although the combat is bad. But dialogue-wise, character-wise, character agency, it's all great.
I remember reading somewhere that the animation of Shepard's walk cycle looks like he's trying to chew toffee with his bum. I can't not notice it now because the way that he like wiggles, he saunters as he runs
he's just
down.
Bringing you in, he's just getting
he's like, you in. He's like, I'm going to go slay some vampires. Look at my juicy room.
That seems to be one thing that they've changed with the Legendary Edition, because they've like given it the new like 2 and 3's game engine, combat engine, movement engine is now in 1. So he moves with that weird like bounce that he has in like 2 and 3.
Like he's so happy to be going and killing
just,
aliens.
Hey, just whatever.
Here I go slaying again.
He's loving it. But I'll make new choices.
There is also one big question that's raised from this, and that is, will the Legendary Edition come with the absolutely stonking multiplayer suite from Mass Effect 3?
It will not. I can confirm that right now.
Well, they said they won't.
Yeah, it's not. It's not. Do you not watch What Culture Gaming, Jules Gill? I did a whole.
It's too much content, mate. It's too much. I can't keep up.
No, we did. I sat in on a BioWare thing last week, and I think it was last week. Times a Fat Circle, but they answered a bunch of questions. The Mass Effect 3 multiplayer is not part of it because they're focusing on single player. But Mac Walters said that if you want to play Mass Effect 3 multiplayer, the servers are still online, so you can go do that now. It's backwards compatible on Xbox One.
Fair enough. Okay.
And Mass Effect Andromeda is still online as well. If you want to go resurrect that tire fire.
No. You could have. There was a sentence that you went too far there. Just
Andromeda's
cut it
multiplayer is all right, but might be the only thing that's right. Okay. I was going to say as well, when you mentioned Tali, do you think in the Legendary Edition they will change her photo? Because it was notoriously photo.
Yeah. If they do, it will be the talk of the internet. And if they don't, it will be the talk of the internet.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
I don't know. Do you cast Tali at this point? If no one knows, in Mass Effect 3, if you've romanced Tali the entire trilogy and you make it so that she's the person that you settle down with at the end of that game, she reveals her face to you by way of she leaves and she leaves you a photo of her face.
She does the classic thing of like she takes the mask off, but you, the player, don't see it. But
that's
he
what says
for
me. So then, so you as the audience only get to see it through like photo form after she's left, after you've gone off to the big mission. But when you look at the photo, BioWare literally just took a stock image of a woman from like Google Image and just put it in there, which was hilarious.
BioWare just like, nah, no one will notice this. No one who's interested in sci-fi games cares to look stuff up on the internet.
Like, what crunch conditions led to that? Where it's like, can we take a photo of anyone, someone in the corner, we take a photo of them? No, you've got to use Google Image right now.
Perfect casting choice for her, though.
Go on.
To complete my full unadulterated love for her,
yes,
make it Ashley Birch. If they do that,
oh, that would be laser focus.
I will use the hole on that game for many different reasons.
Use the hole.
The little disc hole. Oh, God.
You've got access to the hole. Next question from Darren Martin, podcaster Unreal Lads. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hope you're all well. Same to you. What is the game coming this year that you're looking forward to the most?
Absolutely none of them. I hate video games. Hate video. I'm leaving the channel. I've never heard. I'm quitting. I'm quitting now. I'm going to go up into into the mountains, live the life of a hermit.
I think my thing with these kind of questions is that I don't even really think that anything's coming this year. Like, I mean, like God of War seems like
I'm bringing up the release schedule.
Okay, like I have a bit of it in the top of my head. Like, I'm looking forward to obviously Ratchet and Clank because I want to see stuff that's made for the PS5. Mm-hmm. I want to see what that system can do. I guess I'm like curious what Gran Turismo is like because that was the first thing ever shown off on the PS5. But for me personally, it would be God of War. I just don't trust that it's actually coming this year, but Sony won't say anything.
I mean, it's Resident Evil Village. I mean, right. I guess like that's the one that I'm looking for. I'm just scrolling down here. I can't actually Deathloop. I'm excited about. I think that's got such an interesting premise. And the more that I've seen of the gameplay, the more I'm like, how are they going to make this last like a long time?
I am curious about Halo. I don't know. I love Halo with like all my heart. And it's like that. I played back through the Master Chief Collection and stuff. And I hope that Infinite can get somewhere close to Bungie's offering. I just don't. My gut says they won't nail it, but
they've got Back for Blood, which is the Left 4 Dead spiritual successor. I'm very hyped about that. Oh, and of course, Warhammer 40K Darktide. That like I know that it's like there are all these big games here. Like they'll pass me by, and I'll be like, oh yeah, big tall vampire lady, squish me under your heel, whatever. But when it comes down to the games that I'm like rocking hard, it's got to be Darktide. Any mixture of Left 4 Dead with Warhammer and guns. Yeah, sign
he's
me
done.
Up,
give him all the chainsaw guns or whatever.
Yeah, do it.
It's the simple thing.
Yeah,
for me, I mean, Resident Evil 8, like, obviously, I'm still super curious what the difference between the now current gen version and the last gen version is. Because I just want stuff that shows off what I spent half a grand on.
Yeah, not stuff that's like being anchored back by the previous generation.
And it's like Cyberpunk sort of just, I'm looking forward to Cyberpunk looking more gorgeous. Like, I still love that game, but I want to see that look better on new hardware or newer hardware. Get closer to the hallowed ground of the PC folk. Like
they have stated, I mean, IGN, they're putting out some big claims here saying that God of War Ragnarok's coming out this year. I mean, if it is, that's got to be.
The smoking gun with that is that on the last state of play and the small print at the bottom, every game that was shown, God of War was shown, but every game that was shown had a release date next to it or a month, and God of War didn't. And it's just like, I don't know, they don't seem to be committing, but they won't. They also won't address any comments on it being delayed. So there is that. Anyway, next question from Jamie. What is your most irrational fear? The sillier, the better. I'm assuming this is just across the board, not like a video game fear.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable, too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
I'll tell you what as well. Another question from Ethan, who said, did the series Xbox Series X fan holes make you panic? I feel like at some point in the 5 to 7 years of life, something's going to fall in it.
I mean, I don't have one, so I don't have to live through
that. No, but that, you know, you've been around various holes in one place before.
I have indeed, mate. That was my uni years. Whenever I look at them, I do get sort of like, I've lived in enough shared accommodations to know how filthy rooms can get.
Yes.
And I remember picking up a friend's PS2 once and like the back fan was like cake.
Skin cake.
Like, yeah, oh, that's gross. But also a perfectly apt description of what it is. Now I'm imagining all of them holes just filled up with little skin cake, as you've said. Yeah, filth. Filthy.
Bit of, skin juice.
So yeah, keep your Xboxes clean, kids.
Yeah, my irrational fear, I don't really have too much of one. I hate spiders. I've had to sort of, over the years, you have to get used to dealing with them. And so I've had to like fight that. I used to hate moths. I don't know. I don't really have many irrational fears.
I have like, I guess it's more of an anxiety than a fear of going in to order something and getting the order totally wrong. Like, I don't know why. I don't trust myself to order stuff.
Well, like fast food?
Yeah, like, so say I go up there and I go like, in my mind, I'm like, I want a number 5. 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 Excuse me, sir, what do you want? A number 7. I'm like, why did I say that? It's almost like Tourette's in a sense that I'm just like, no, that is not what I
need. I'll tell you what.
And I have to correct the order. And it happened once, right? I went in there, ordered something, and then she was like, took the order through, and I was like, you know what? I'm really sorry. I don't want that. Can I have this instead? She looked at me like, okay, like, yeah. Why but did so you even times, bother saying anything?
So many times you go through that moment where you order something, you know your guts, your heart's not in it, and you don't say anything. I think you do that more when you're younger because you don't want to be a bother. And it's not that you want to be a full-on Karen, but at some point you should order the thing you want. So I think
yeah,
that's
I know.
Fine.
Yeah, weird.
I tell you what, when you said about like ordering the wrong thing or doing something wrong, like menial stuff, I always don't believe myself that I've locked my car or the door.
Every time
I have to go back out and go to the shops and I have to like go back to the door and make sure and just bank that memory this time and make sure I've got no consciously record this brain. You've done this. And every time I come back in the house, I think I've left the car unlocked. It's just, I don't know what it is, but it's like manual saves and quick saves. I'm just sort of like my brain just does it, but I need to manually save it. Otherwise it's not going to work. Next question from Coot McGoot, great name.
Oh, hey, how's it going, mate?
Coot McGoot, what's your most memorable gore moment in games? I have a one specifically for this, if you don't have something that comes to mind.
So gore, as in
gore
G-O-R-E?
Moment. Yeah, G-O-R-E.
Some as in like just an uber-violent moment?
Yeah, yeah. Well, see, because I guess you could have like a fatality or something. My mind went to, in God of War 2, there's a bit, I forget the name of the dude that you jam into a door, but there's a guy that you know, he's Kratos, he has a bit of a problem with someone.
Yeah.
And you beat this boss, and the way that you beat him after you've defeated him is you just stick his head in a door and just smash him with a door over and over again. And it's mapped. It's so good. It's mapped to like square or circle, and you just mash the button, and Kratos is just hitting him with a door. And I love that. Young me watching the wrestling, loved that.
See, I got the one which had kind of really made my stomach churn, and that was that GTA mission where you got to like interrogate the man.
Oh God, the torture.
And you use the torture bits. I'm just kind of like, okay, the game's going to cut away here. We'll like, it'll pan to the outside of the room. We'll just hear the screams and it'll be like, oh, you're so edgy. You did that. And then you're watching him do it and you're like, oh, I did that. I chose for this to happen.
Do you want to rotate the stick and pull his tooth out?
Because I really don't. But the game is not like, I was like, oh, okay.
Ooh. It's I think the industry's moved away from more over the top gore. I kind of realized that playing Werewolf Apocalypse Young Earth.
Oh, okay.
Because when you slash dudes with the claws, you can rip their heads off to get your energy back and everything, and just claret everywhere, just like plumes of claret everywhere. And I kind of, that game is 2003 AF anyway, but it's just like, I was just like, oh, this is like so what we would have thought was cool back in like the mid 2000s.
Is it pure jank as well?
Oh God. Oh my God. Well, I did a little tweet comparing it to X2 Wolverine's Revenge and Blood Rain 2. Like it's the mesh of those two things, which makes it sound more lovable than it is. Those games were horrible to get through, but yeah, fun at the time because we just put up with it. Anyway, next question from Trevor Rill. Here's a fun conversation starter. When did EA officially start losing its credibility and become the greedy company that we know today? We all know microtransactions and gambling / loot box mechanics were in games years prior to Battlefront 2. And then someone called Andrew Lloyd jumped in and said, well, EA back on the PS2 era used to put out a lot of great games. EA on the box used to mean something. Burnout 3, Battlefront, the original Battlefront 1 and 2, SSX Tricky, 007 Nightfire, Everything or Nothing, Lord of the Rings, Need for Speed, all the different Need for Speeds and Most Wanted, whereas now EA only means microtransactions.
Yeah, I think it's the moment that they decided to turn in themselves from like a developer to a publisher to like a conglomerate. There's like a three-stage program where they were like grassroots, let's build games, let's give people experiences. Then they moved into like a very franchised, every game had to like an annualized thing. And that limited their scope of creativity because they just drilled down into games that made them a lot of money.
Yeah.
And then they used that money to buy in other ideas. And the moment that they did that, they stopped becoming like a generator of new experiences and more like a consumer, like an apex predator picking at the bones of other stuff. Mm-hmm. And once they kept on doing that more and more and more, because I mean now with Codemasters falling under their reign as of like what, yesterday, 2 days ago, they have now got, what is it, like 10 or 12 studios, something like that they've like eaten over the years that are part of the big EA blob, yet they don't even allow them to make games half the time.
Well, it's the amount of studios that they've bought up and then just rinsed and gone, okay, let's exhaust this IP, let's mine this franchise, get the money out. I did want to Google this very quickly. The pivot for me, and it's a brilliant video by Skillup, did a whole thing about how Andrew Wilson, who's now their CEO or something, he's the dude that said, hey, look, football games should have blind boxes in them. And he initially put them in the UEFA Champions League games back in, I think the original one was 2008, 2009's version. And that's the thing, because it's like, you know, you can point out like, well, games had microtransactions beforehand, but they weren't anywhere near as aggressive as they would become after the blind box stuff started. And just sheer dev time turnaround or proof of concept stuff, you know, they were introduced at the very end of the 2000s. And then I think with the turn of the new generation and with Andrew Wilson's stuff taking off more and him getting more influence and he's higher in the company, he's like, well, everything should have this. And then, you know, there's all that stuff. And they started just putting it in as many different titles as possible. And,
We saw a similar thing happen with the Ubisoft or Ubisoft, however you want to pronounce it, thing when they had three or four people dictating 10 franchises and all the franchises felt the same because it was only coming from those two or three people.
Literally.
And it is totally true that, as Scott said, when you have people rising up the ranks, they take their ideas with them, but they're not adapting to the market. They're just telling the market what they are going to have, and they're going to love it. Like it's very strange.
The constant push and pull of, you know, you want to do a creative thing. Okay, well, I need money to get that out there to a big audience, depending on what you're trying to put together. And obviously, I would say across the last generation, the eighth generation, the percentage of business mentality versus creative prioritization shifted so much more towards business. And it's like, well, we can just mine this thing. We can release the same game engine. We can release the same set of mechanics because they're bankable and we're not chasing innovation or we're not chasing new genres anywhere near as much as we could be.
It's very strange because if you look back at like the history of cinema, there was like this big boom period where lots and lots of studios decided to make lots of, not great films. They just gave them a little bit of cash as a startup. They said, as long as it makes a little bit of a profit, because we've spread it out across so many films, if they all come back in, we'll make a ton of money.
Yeah.
And if a few of them like fail, then it doesn't matter because they're bolstered by the rest of them. EA have that approach to their video games now, but they've insisted that every single one of them is maximized for profit. Yeah. They will not accept a loss. And it's so strange because you see once great ideas be hampered by this homogeneous approach to monetization. And it's just like, if this was scaled back, this would actually sell better.
Yeah.
And you probably would make more money.
They
it's
could do
so
a
bizarre.
Burnout game. They could do, you know, they could yeah. go back, they could do a quick small scale license game, kind of like Star Wars Squadrons, kind of like Jedi Fallen Order, the stuff that they've started doing a lot more of. But yeah, I mean, I think it's a wider thing. I think social media data plays into it a lot as well, if I had to guess, because they have so much more literal data to pull from where they're going, well, this didn't sell. People didn't even see this part of the story. So why are we even developing it? And so you lose that appeal of general fandoms latching onto fan moments, story moments, reveals, plot twists, whatever, because they can just go, well, this bankable part is the gameplay mechanic. Let's just do as much of that as possible.
Yeah, we come back to that quote by the guy from, I think it was Activision, who just said, like, look, we're not making a Call of Duty campaign because this percentage of people never even got through it.
Yeah.
And you're like, I hate that you're right, but at the same time, you're restricting content from people because some people don't play it. And I was
it's just, I think all those conversations are fascinating. Like the clash of business and artistry, like it goes across the board, it's across every medium. And it's like, well, should you bother quote unquote doing something if it's not going to make financial sense? And it's like, well, if it's on the behalf of the person who wants to express something, then yes. But like the way that it's gone across the eighth gen is that all those stat crunching people can be like, your idea is literally not worth money, so we shouldn't do it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, it ignores the concepts of lost leaders about things that go out there for the benefit of the player, but not the benefit of the company. Mm-hmm. And we are seeing a severe lack of that. I mean, you could just take the entire monetization practice of loot box, DLC, expansion packs, microtransactions, and just say this at one point in time was all unlockable content. Mm-hmm. This was something that rewarded the players for their hard graft. And now it's a case of it only rewards you if you're going to open up your wallets. And that's a real shame. Like we've reiterated this point maybe since you and I started working here and before, and it is still as depressing then as it is now. Sort of thing. You're just like, okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I can always see the business reality of it. I get that if you just mine the living hell out of this set of mechanics, some people will keep putting money into it. And it's not like on the Activision side, it's not like Call of Duty isn't making billions. I mean, on EA's side, FIFA is as well. And they just got out there saying that with the Codemasters acquisition, they're going to put live service elements into F1, Grid, Dirt going forward. Franchises that didn't have them before, even had Grid's director said he hated microtransactions, but he's just not in control of it anymore. So like, there's all that side of it. I think it goes back and forward. I mean, people who are only in the gaming industry to make money are like, they are they're necessary to a degree, but I think the more of that pie they eat up, the more disappointing it is, especially when you compare to the boom period. Like you said, it's not like gaming hasn't had a boom period, 80s, 90s, early 2000s.
Well, the problem is that those people, like you said, they get so much of the pie that they become the dictators saying what the size of the pie even is. Mm-hmm. So then you just go like, well, okay, well, we're just going to cater to your whims then. And then you design an industry around the business rather than the business, the industry around the player.
It's interesting, like cyclically as well, because I think that a lot of those people who are a bit older grew up in the arcades or grew up seeing the arcade business model and thought, okay, you pay to play. Why did we go through this entire, from their point of view, this 90s, 2000s period where, oh, we gave a whole story for free, did we? Like, oh, we give all these characters for free.
The thing I hate about that though is we are still paying to play. We are buying the media. Why are you charging us more on top of it? Like, I don't know, man. Like,
it's a whole thing.
It is a whole thing.
One last question, which is a little bit more serious than the usual stuff, although same vein of seriousness that we did. From PG Quips, again, phenomenal name.
What a name.
What a name, Mr. PG Quips. Do you think the game dev / publisher should reveal how much money you'll have to spend to unlock everything in the game that they are selling you? Maybe a note in the description saying full content unlock, £120, for example. And then he just randomly says best EA game was Harry Potter Quidditch World Cup, which, I mean, you know, fine.
I love that. Just kind of like, it feels like, you know, when it's not like, they have that thing where it's like, they say, I yield the floor. It's one of those things where it's like, the speaker recognizes it. He comes up and he's like, big book. He comes down and like, reads all this book. And at the very end, he's like, and that's what I believe will help us solve all of this world crisis. By the way, Harry Potter Quidditch World Cup was the best game ever. And he just like walks away, just like just for anyone to like stunned.
It's a valid strategy. I haven't even played Harry Potter Quidditch World Cup, but I can almost hear Rich scratching at the door trying to tell him about it. In terms of the amount of the reason they don't do that is because I have to assume is because the amount of money it would take you to unlock everything is predicated on blind buy. It's RNG. It's a random number generators. I remember when everybody in the For Honor community realized that it would be like thousands and thousands of pounds or dollars to get all the unlocks in that game. So I think that if you put that on the box, people will run for the hills.
Do you remember the bloody Apex Legends thing with the crow cane or the raven thing where it's somebody was like, you've got to go through the battle pass. Then you've got to like get these. If you do that, you get access to these boxes, and the boxes can only be bought with this premium currency that you can only get if you completed the other thing. And somebody found out it was like $3,000 or something like that. If you were to like pay everything together, that's ridiculous. But then again, there's two ways of looking at it. You either say it's the monetary cost to unlock everything, as Scott would say, if you just bought it and got the item every single time, first time round, or you go on the monetary value of what they think the in-game items are worth, as in like, because the amount of like stuff, Evolve is the perfect example of this. When that came out, they charged, I think it was £15 per monster. That is excessive for just one character. That did not cost them that much to make that one character. No. So why are we paying that? It's setting the market price at a ridiculous level.
And I think is it's weird with stuff like that because, for example, not to out the man, but Josh Brown has spent a lot of money on his bullet tracers for Modern Warfare. And I know that they happen to go for about £16, which I couldn't believe.
What?
And I know, it's a whole thing. But not to out the man. Could be John Brown. No idea.
Yeah, exactly.
And but in regards to the idea of charging that much money for a bullet tracer, it's like, well, okay, if the overall game price is, let's say, £50, then over a fifth of that game price is worth that bullet tracer, which it clearly isn't. There's so much more to that game. So for me, that always throws me off, where I'm like, the percentage of the full price, if that equates the full product, then how could you possibly say that something as small as a bullet tracer is also worth over a fifth of the entire product? It's a weird way to phrase it, but like, yeah, I just think that when you start charging £5 for a character skin or whatever, that is so crazy if you just bought the whole game for £30 or whatever.
It's very bizarre. But I mean, going back to the question, yes, I would love as much transparency as possible within our video games. Unfortunately, I'm not actually sure if seeing that monetary figure would actually be beneficial. I don't think it would put certain people off because it's relative. Like I don't, for example, pay into loot box stuff. That monetary figure at the bottom actually doesn't matter to me because I pay the upfront cost and I will happily sit there and grind away at the pennies that they give me rather than ever give them extra money. Mm-hmm. That's just because I'm stubborn as hell. But like, so that doesn't really give me an indication of the overall game. But if that figure was astronomically high, say it was in the thousands of pounds, I might look at that and go, oh, I can see immediately that this has got it's a pay to win game with freemium practices.
Yeah, I think the thing that I quite liked is that I think it was in Belgium. I think China have started to do it where they forced devs, publishers, marketing teams to devolve the drop rates so that you know, just even if you don't know how much money an individual transaction is, you know the likelihood of actually getting the thing that you want. And I think that for me is a decent enough middle ground. Where I mean, I would love full clarity. I would love just a giant storefront. If you're going to insist on microtransactions, at least show me what I can buy rather than just spinning a roulette wheel and hoping for the best. But yeah, I think that the whole conversation around this stuff, you would assume would change this generation because some people on the Ubisoft side, for example, have been outed and some of those business practices are being addressed. But there's also EA and Lootbox Wilson still doing his thing saying like, well, we're just going to put more of them in.
The only way that it will change is if people vote with their wallets. And unfortunately, I'm not saying that it's any fault of these people that do spend a lot of money on loot boxes. It is a predatory and manipulative business practice that speaks to you in ways that you do not really understand. Like most of the time, like as much as people like to think that they've got an active choice, it is very easy to be influenced and advertised to in your own video games. So I try not to just go off the rails at people if they go, oh, I spent thousands of pounds on that, because it's their choice at the end of the day. Yeah. And it is a real problem if it becomes like a spending addiction and things like that. Mm-hmm. And they need help with that. So you need to approach the situation with sympathy rather than, oh, you're stupid.
I've got like game dev friends. I still like it's fascinating. The conversation around sustaining a pool of people who are still working on a title, who are still maintaining servers, who are still like putting content out or whatever, they need money. So like, I get it's going to be necessary to have some version of microtransactions in there somewhere, but it's all about fairness. It's all about how clear it is what you're buying, the reasons they're in there, the product, the budget of the production in the first place. There's there's so many factors to it. But in regards to, you know, what a consumer's getting into, something like this is would obviously be a worthwhile step. I just don't think they would ever disclose, hey, the actual full amount is like £50,000.
Yeah,
because it makes them look stupid.
Yeah, it would just raise the curtain on how money grabbing some of the practices are.
Well, yeah, using it. As soon as that starts to shift, and you see almost like a Wall Street Bets style thing of like enough people on the BBC or whatever, more stuff getting out there of how ridiculous it is, then maybe you'll get another seismic shift, kind of like Battlefront 2. Because at least after that, you then got Jedi Fallen Order and Squadrons and more considered things.
Yeah, our two apology games.
Yeah, literally, they feel like that. And they're solid enough, but yeah. For now, though, this has been the Untitled Bounty podcast, the UPP, which is never really in sync, but we do what we can. We've got the gowns on. We've got the, you know, we're drinking the tea.
It
makes sense. May trying our best. So, we'll be back this time next week. Come find us on probably Thursday afternoon, UK time, to find some sort of tweet you can send in, your thoughts, your questions, whatever you'd like us to get to, and we'll catch you guys next week. For now, I've been Scott Tailford, joined by Jules Gill.
Thanks for having me, mate.
And we'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.